You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This edition is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentaries Global Rankings in association with the Saudi Cup, and by FitzDares, the 2020 Racing Bookmaker of the Year. In celebration of the Cheltenham Festival, FitzDares are offering Nick Luck Daily listeners money back if beaten by a length or less on day one of the Cheltenham Festival. Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, March the 3rd. Hard in many respects to get your head around the fact that the Cheltenham Festival starts in just 13 days' time. The news agenda this week has been completely alien to what it would be in a normal year. And the Gordon Elliott story continues to bring with it developments almost by the hour. And through the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to try and separate the facts from the wild speculation in the company of senior writer from the Racing Post, Lee Mottershead. Lee, let's pick up where we left off yesterday. Just after the podcast went live yesterday, Richard Thompson from Cheveley Park Stud gave an interview to Sky Sports Racing where he announced the removal of their horses to other stables, to Willie Mullins and to Henry de Bromhead. De Bromhead will now take care of Envoi Allen. What was your reaction to this? Were you in any way surprised?
No, I wasn't, Nick. I think it had been flagged initially. There were certainly rumours that the horses would be moving to Henry de Bromhead probably 24 hours before they actually moved. And I think Henry had actually confirmed the horses hadn't gone there some 24 hours earlier. But I think Cheveley Park, given its standing and its reputation, I think they would have been in a desperately difficult position had they left the horses within that yard. It was perhaps surprising that they waited 24 hours in the sense that we haven't had the investigation yet, the inquiry, and therefore one wonders why they didn't take the decision when they saw the picture. But regardless of that, I think they probably had to take that decision. And just in terms of the racing aspect, as we move towards the Cheltenham Festival, those moves create lots of questions, as Paul Nicholls was raising yesterday, in terms of whether those horses will respond well in a new setting. Horse like Envoi Allen is odds on favourite for his Cheltenham Festival target. He's arguably the highest profile jumper in training, and he's now in a new yard 2 weeks before running at the Cheltenham Festival. So lots of interesting racing angles. From that, Henry de Bromhead's yard, clearly massively empowered. Willie Mullins taking lots of three more really good horses as well. But clearly this is such a huge story. That particular aspect of it is just one small angle in the wider picture.
It is. And clearly they were the owners that most people were focusing on because their horses at the moment are the most high profile ones, particularly Envoi Allen. And I'm going to come back to that from a human angle in a few moments' time. Noel Moran sponsored Gordon Elliott's yard. He has withdrawn the imaging from the horse boxes and has disassociated himself as regards his sponsorship, but he leaves the horses in the stable, which is very much what he indicated to me when I spoke with him on Monday. You know, he was brief but courteous, and he said at the moment the horses aren't going anywhere.
That's right. And of course, Gordon Elliott has been intrinsically linked to the Moran's entry into horse racing. As you say, the horses remain in the yard for now. Noel spoke to Racing Post on Wednesday morning. He said the rumours that we have moved the horses from Gordon's stable are totally untrue. I have no idea where they came from. As myself and Valerie said on Monday, Valerie's Noel's wife, we will await the decision of the IHRB hearing on Friday before making any further comment on decisions. The fact that these rumours came out the previous day, the horses had left the yard and were already in the yard of Noel Mead, does highlight the extent to which Chinese whispers take off in a situation like this. And I think we all have to be careful to try and limit what we're talking about to things that we actually know. And that is now something that we know this morning.
The Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board hearing is now set for Friday. Now, this again dropped just after we published this podcast yesterday, but I'm sure most of you are aware of this now. The exact time of that hearing is uncertain as yet. So what time you're likely to get a verdict on Saturday, Sunday is indistinct. What I can tell you is that the hearing will be chaired by the Honourable Ms Justice Leonie Reynolds, who is a High Court judge. Now, the IHRB have taken a bit of criticism over the length of time it's taking to get to hearing, Lee. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'll make my own position clear on this. I think that's quite unfair. Yeah, Friday's only 2 days from now. This story, in reality, is only 2.5 days old. I think they've moved expeditiously enough in the circumstances. They've got to get the panel together. They've got to get everyone to agree a time for the hearing. They've also got to give Gordon Elliott, most importantly, a chance to get his legal representation together. These are decisions that may well have a material effect on his livelihood. And if that's to be the case, then he has the right to proper and timely legal counsel.
Yeah, and you certainly haven't put words in my mouth there, Nick. I would concur with all that. When you think that this only really emerged as a story on Saturday evening, to reach the point where you can have an inquiry on Friday is actually quite quick. I know people are saying, well, this is based purely around the fact that this picture has come out. Is it right or wrong? Make a decision. But as you say, they have to convene a panel. Just as importantly as convening a panel, as you say, Gordon Elliott faces, he faces losing his career for an indefinite period of time. It is absolutely right that he is afforded the opportunity to get expert legal guidance. It would be wholly wrong if that wasn't the case. And to do all that within 5 days is actually pretty quick. So I don't in any way feel that the IHRB has mishandled the timing of this. I also, though, don't feel that the BHA was wrong to do what it did during the week. I know that there are differing points of view over this, and I sense that in Ireland there is hostility to the BHA having taken the decision not to accept entries from Gordon Elliott. But I think there is a British angle to this, clearly, in the sense that the Cheltenham Festival begins in 2 weeks' time. It is our highest profile race meeting. And we are in a situation, I think, particularly in this country, where the social license on which horse racing operates is constantly under scrutiny. And you only have to read some of the media coverage this morning in The Times and The Guardian. There have been very strong comment opinion pieces which have been extremely aggressive towards horse racing. And I think the BHA and the Jockey Club, which owns Cheltenham, would be well aware of that. And I think they will feel they had to make a stand to indicate that, perfectly understandably, they would not want Gordon Elliott being part of this Cheltenham Festival. And whilst that's not ideal, I know, for the IHRB, and it will raise concerns in Ireland, I think it was the right thing to do.
I made the point yesterday, and I'd make it again. I can see that it has put the relationship between the two governing bodies under a little bit of strain, but I think it is something that can be remedied in the fullness of time. It also leads us on to the question of the premises at Cullen Trar, and if Gordon Elliott is asked to take a suspension or is banned, who can take over the license, or who can become the person in charge of that training base, if indeed that becomes an option. Now, I've made some inquiries today, and what I can tell you is that it can't be someone who is not currently licensed, because the next two trainers courses in Ireland are full, so the modules wouldn't be able to be completed on time. So if there's to be a transition whereby somebody else does take on the license, it would have to be an already licensed trainer.
And that clearly raises further complications. The yard, as Gordon made clear when speaking to David Jennings, my colleague, earlier in the week, is his yard. He owns the yard. So if the IHRB did decide to remove his license for a period of time, it would be very likely that if that yard was to continue operation, Gordon Elliott might well have to be off that yard completely, which again adds further complications to it. And if they do want to bring somebody in to in effect run the yard for a period of time while Gordon is out of action, presumably Gordon and his owners would need to be responsible for finding that person. That person would presumably have to be an existing trainer if it has to be a licensed individual, and to do that at short notice isn't easy. And perhaps, I don't know how this works, Nick, perhaps during these 5 days prior to the hearing and in between the actual incident becoming public knowledge, perhaps the IHOB will be waiting to see if they can present an option for going forward. If he does have his license, they need to have a plan B. The thing is, well, we also need to make the point that we know the hearing is on Friday. We don't know that there will be a decision made on Friday. It's very often the case that a hearing takes place and a panel will want time to deliberate. Now, they might come to a decision on Friday. They might not. But whatever decision they come to, presumably Gordon Elliott will have, as would normally be perfectly right and found any legal process, the right to appeal. So, again, this could go on certainly beyond Friday. I wouldn't be sure that Friday is the day which we will know what's happening.
I just want to dispel another couple of myths that are doing the rounds. The first has been fairly well dispelled by a number of our colleagues, but I'll do it again. You don't need to be in another yard for 14 days before you run. As long as you're moving from one licensed premises to another, it's absolutely fine. And that would obviously apply also if somebody else took over the training reins at Cullen Trar. So I don't think there's any issue there about horses being unable to run at Cheltenham or whenever, unless they're coming for an unlicensed premises or unless the BHA introduce a new rule in the next couple of weeks, which has surely got to be unlikely. The other myth that has been perpetuated is that the IHRB don't have a provision within their rule book to deal with this particular misdemeanor. Well, they do. It's rules 272, and it's about acting in a manner prejudicial to the good conduct of horse racing. And there is a maximum fine point there as well, but that rule is the one that would be looked at, rule 272. Right. So just so you're clear on a couple of myths that have been doing the rounds in recent days. Ali, I want to talk a little bit about the human cost here. And clearly the IHRB and the inquiry and the sport as a whole has a duty of care to the workforce at Gordon Elliott Stable, many of whom would not have been involved in this and would have had no knowledge of it and are presumably pretty distressed by proceedings. And I wonder whether that might be a factor in play when it comes to then deciding whether the yard can be taken over by somebody with a trainer's license from outside.
Yeah, and there clearly is a huge human angle to this, and there are many humans involved. As you say, Nick, there are people within that yard who are now bound to be distraught. The scenes in the yard yesterday must have been desperate, as horses that people cherish in the yard were removed and taken to a different stable. And your heart does go out for those people. Sadly, it's something that does happen in racing quite a lot. It's not a million years ago that an awful lot of Jiggins Townhouse stud horses were moved from Willie Mullins' yard to Gordon Elliott and elsewhere. And I'm sure the people who looked after those horses at Clissutton were equally distraught. It's a very sad thing indeed, and your heart goes out to all those people. And of course, there is also a duty of care to Gordon Elliott and to Rob James. What they have done, I think, has rightly been condemned, and they deserve to be punished, and they should be punished. And people who are critical of what they have done and of them are entitled to be critical. That isn't a bad thing to do, because I think the world outside of horse racing needs to know that we are appalled. But equally, I think we have to focus as much on the act as the perpetrator. And I think if there is any sort of problem that extends beyond these two individual cases to culture within the sport, wherever that may be, then that is what we have to be tackling. Because I think we have to be looking at why, in the case of the Rob James incident, a group of young men thought that what he did was funny and entertaining. And that can be removed, as I say, from the individuals involved to why would they think that was funny and entertaining. And if that means that we need to do more with education, we're looking more at what young people coming into sport are taught, then that's what we need to do.
Understandably, now, as the news cycle moves so quickly, social media has called for more compassion and less condemnation, particularly in the case of Gordon Elliott, and with his career and life that he's built up so admirably crumbling around him. I think, Lee, you'd like to think people had the emotional intelligence to be able to have compassion on a human level and to understand the human cost of this, but at the same time to recognize that racing has a very serious problem on its hands and that the impact of this is going to last for quite some significant time.
Yeah, and that's right. Inevitably, Nick, we as individuals are held account for our actions, and we should be held account for our actions. And it would be wholly wrong for racing not to be condemning what has taken place. And I think that feeling primarily comes from a sense of shock. This happened at the end of a period of time when on 3-4 weekends, jump racing has been hit by a terrible number of fatalities, of some high profile horses as well. And I think the sport was already quite raw from that. And I think people who were at the meetings involved and know the people to whom those horses were very dear know how upset they were and how it affected them. And therefore, I think the fact that this has come off the back of those series of desperately sad events has just made it seem all the worse. The fact that people have been viewing a dead horse in the way they have. And I think people are finding it hard to compute how people could behave like that, which is why I say I think we need to be thinking as much about education as anything else and trying to get to the root of the problem. But you're right, Nick, we can look at this in two ways, and we can as human beings be prepared, be able and willing and actually needing to condemn what was done, whilst not forgetting that there are people involved. I don't think anybody would say they want to see Gordon Elliott or Rob James suffer forever from this. Of course, we don't think that. They need to be punished. They need to be punished primarily, I think, because the sport needs to make clear to people outside the sport that this isn't reflective of what racing people are. It's great to say things like the horses at Gordon's Yard were treated like kings and queens, but realistically, people both inside and outside the sport should expect that as a given anyway. I think we have to send out the message that this is wrong, but I think we can do that in a way that once a decision is made, that people do try to ensure that that Gordon and Rob and anybody else who is involved are looked after and have a future.
Lee Mottershead there, senior writer from the Racing Post. Now, changing tack today, and I said at the beginning of this podcast that it seems pretty weird that the Cheltenham Festival is so close and festival fever hasn't really gripped. Don't worry, it will. And from now until Tuesday week, we will be doing our very best to bring you some of the best insight on this podcast. With that in mind, I've been talking to trainer Kim Bailey this morning, who's assembling a fine team for this year's festival. He is also one of the trainers most local to Cheltenham itself, and it would normally be a real festival feeling about his whole stable in the lead up to the big event. I began by putting it to him that this would be a very strange year.
To be honest about it, it's been actually rather peaceful. The Cheltenham preview evenings to me are all, I do the odd one, I do one with you, but as you well know, it's always And it's my opinion, your opinion, and the people in the audience's opinion. And frankly, none of us are going to shift our thoughts anyway. So you sit there and end up having an argument or having an agreement, whichever the case might be, followed by quite a lot to drink and feeling quite rough the following morning. So the modern form is so much easier. You know, it's a cup of coffee, a Zoom meeting, and off you go.
Of course, it'll be very different when you actually get to the festival itself and a festival with nobody there. I know we've got used to it. I know we're now kind of immune to it. But that will be something different again, won't it?
It'll be horrendous. I'm absolutely dreading it. My week starts off here with 30 odd people turning up on a daily basis to come and see horses on the way through. We have busloads of people. We're going to have nobody here, and it's going to be. Hang on a second. What's the time now? Oh, crikey! I better get off and go racing. The buzz will, in many respects, have gone. The queue of traffic we normally face is not going to be there. Walking past all the Irish excitement and people selling you shamrocks and lucky bits of heather and God knows what else, you know, it'll be odd. It'll be horrible. I shall watch my horses run and come home.
And of course, the counterpoint to that for you is that you could have a really good year, and you're certainly going to be represented in a lot of the very high profile races. How big a squad do you think you'll have when you total them all up? How many horses do you think you'll take as we sit here now?
We'll take 4/5.
Okay, so the obvious sort of flag bearer, I suppose, is going to be First Flow in the Champion Chase, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the horses we're going to take are First Flow, Happy Go Lucky, Imperial Icon, Imperial Aura, sorry, Vindication, Never Call, possibly Does He Know, Another Venture, possibly in a handicap.
Yeah, that was definitely more than 4 or 5.
Yeah, I know. I've never been very good at maths.
So it's a good, strong squad. Let's talk about First Flow. I mean, the weather forecast is quite nice for us, possibly not great for him.
No, and I mean, at the present moment in time, the case of wine that landed on Simon Clayton's doorstep asking him to start watering hasn't really... He either decided he doesn't like my wine, but he's not going to water. So that's disappointing. I should be watching the weather forecast. I think I've got 7 apps on my phone with different weather forecasts, and none of them ever say the same thing. And I will be sitting here watching and praying. And the sad part about it can pour rain at Thorndale 6 miles away. It won't happen at Cheltenham. But there we are. We can do nothing about it. The water, the ground has been soft there all winter. I don't want it to be too dry. But having said that, I'm pretty sure that he'll run come what may, because dear old Tony Solomons is getting on in age, and the horses as well. So his best run has been on perhaps good to soft. So fingers crossed.
Any suggestion he could be getting better still?
Well, I'm going to tell you yes, because the simple reason, the horse's confidence is now so high. We schooled him this morning and worked him this morning, and he was in such good form. Mind you, horses always work an awful lot better in thick fogs. They have got no idea where they're going. And we've all stood at the top of the gallops this morning with huge smiles on our faces. Never seen the horses work so well. But then we only saw them for 10 yards, so that's absolutely perfect.
Imperial Aura, it's funny, isn't it, how a horse can get no further than, was it the first or the second? It was the second he unseated at Kempton, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, you can get no further than the second, and suddenly he's sort of forgotten about quite quickly. I think people are starting to remember again, though, now, aren't they?
I think probably, it's been quite handy for me that I haven't had every Tom, Dick and Harry wanting to know about him, because at the end of it, most people ring me up and say, how did he take his fall? Well, that's really, actually, it's like, you know, it means he didn't fall. He took his eye off the ball. Frankly, I'd rather him taking the eye off the ball at Kempton in the middle of January than I would do taking the eye off the ball in the middle of March. Hopefully it was a one-off.
And basically, he's a pretty sound jumper, isn't he?
He is a very good jumper, and he schooled again this morning, and pictures on my website of him all coming out of the fog attempting to jump a fence is lovely. But at the end of it, no, I'm really happy with him, you can put a line through Kempton, surely. I sincerely hope that's the case.
Do you think, hand on heart, he's your best chance of a winner this year?
Hand on heart, I think probably yes. He's a very good horse. He's been to Cheltenham 3 times. He's progressive, and yes, it's a seriously competitive race, but I hope he's a very good horse. I think he's a very good horse. He's shown everybody he is a good horse, And David was absolutely thrilled with him this morning. So, you know, that's where we're coming from.
Good news. And as of the others, which one would you be most excited about sort of taking a step forward?
Well, I think Happy Go Lucky is a horse that we've definitely kept for the meeting. We ran him three times over fences to make sure he had a handicap mark. He would have been one tailor-made for the race that Imperial Aura ran in last year, but it wasn't to be. And luckily, he stays. He's in you know, the novice chases as well, but I mean, the most likely race will be the Ultimate, the race that Vindication ran so well in last year. Again, he's schooled and worked this morning. Absolutely thrilled with him, and yeah, fingers crossed. He has a serious chance, and he's a novice going into a handicap with three runs. Yes, but he's a horse that has an attitude of an older man in many comparisons. He doesn't get fazed by things, and he's quite sensible.
Kim, thanks for chatting to me. Best of luck.
You're a star, Nick. Thank you so much for having me on. Okay.
Kim Bailey there, best of luck to him with his team for Cheltenham. Now it is Wednesday, so we're off to Hong Kong, and our correspondent, J.A. McGrath.
Hi Nick, the Brazilian variant has been making news in the UK this week. In these days of the pandemic, nobody is in any doubt what the subject matter concerns if the phrase is dropped into conversation. But I venture to say that in Racing Mad Hong Kong, a casual listener might easily misinterpret the use of the phrase as a discussion about jockeys, and I mean Brazilian jockeys, because Hong Kong racing is becoming a stronghold for the elite from South America, i.e. the top Brazilian riders, the latest of which, 32-year-old Ruan Meyer, had his first rides at Sha Tin last Sunday. And he'll be in action at this week's Wednesday meeting under lights at Happy Valley as well, where he's got a full book of 9 rides. The list of famous Brazilian Knights of the Pigskin is highly impressive. Joe Moreira, obviously, we quote on this podcast on a daily basis. But don't forget, multiple champion of Britain, Sylvester de Souza, who's also hugely popular in Hong Kong. While also currently in the ranks is Wagner Borges, a 4-time Brazilian champion who has over 1,600 winners to his credit. But back to Ruan Meyer, who many in the Far East already know pretty well. He was twice champion in Macau before heading to Singapore, where he was runner-up in the jockey's title, and where he rode 7 winners one day at Kranji, almost doing a Moreira, who in his time there famously rode 8 winners on a Kranji card. Meyer had a tough initiation on Sunday, 8 rides for 5 different stables. The closest he finished was 5th on 1 for Tony Cruz. A contracted jockey club rider can sometimes find it tough. You're often waiting for big-name jockeys to get suspended or injured to get a real crack at the good horses, because in Hong Kong, every horse has a committed jockey. Arguably, the best of Meyer's 9 rides at Happy Valley is King's Trooper for Ricky Yu, race 5, number 8, the only one of his at single-figure odds in early betting. With Moreira under suspension, I think Zach Purton is in danger of running riot. I'm tipping him to win on the good things. Race 7, number 8, Wealthy Delight, and race 9, number 1, Savaquin. But if you want a bit of value about Zach, take race 5, number 5, Hurry Hurry Gain. A very promising 3-year-old son of Caulfield Guineas winner Press Statement, who can break through on only his 2nd start. Take him at a tote swinger with number 4 Superb Daddy and number 2 Shining On. Purton could easily ride 3 or 4 winners on this card. Not that the suspended Moreira should be too worried as he watches on TV from home. He's currently 30 wins ahead in the championship and showing no signs of stopping.
And happily, neither is the croc. Thank you to Jim, thank you to Kim Bailey, and of course to Lee Mottershead, and thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow. That was Wednesday, March the 3rd. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.